judgments. What I tried to do in this case is come up with this list or a taxonomy of what I consider to be very common racing situations, very familiar to all of you. If you read the descriptions of them, you should be able to identify with almost all of them. And to try to suggest which racing situations fall at which point on the scale. Now this is very incomplete. The interview is some noise and some error. And it's going to be biased or adapted in certain ways by each one of you individually because you're going to bring your own experience to these brief descriptions. And there's going to be some problems in trying to implement this. And one of the things we want to do is reduce the subjectivity as much as possible so that the ratings become highly consistent among raters and that your own ratings become consistent from one point in time to another point in time. Ways to do that are simply to read this, read the book version, read as much as you can, think about your own experience as much as you can, and then start to implement it. And kind of monitor your own practice and try to improve yourself. There's two things that I can suggest doing. First of all, there's a practice effect that usually takes place. This isn't something that really you can start doing tomorrow and doing in a way that you're going to feel comfortable with, whether you've rated the race quote accurately. There'll probably be a 2 to 3 month practice effect there. For somewhere between 60 and 90 days, your own ratings will tend to become much more reliable. You'll be rating the same kind of races in the same way. That kind of reliability will be built in. There's two things you can do. One, you can start rating races that you've observed, okay, and wait for a period of 60 to 90 days to go by. Keep the results charts. And go back and read the results charts and see if your ratings are correlating well. That's one thing you can do. Another thing you can do, and this is much, much more difficult to do, but it's not impossible, is to get a smaller sample of races, which you think are highly characteristic of these various points on the scale. Either using a VCR or in some way through a simulcasting or something, and just rating them at various points in time to see if you get the same rating. Put them aside for 30 to 60 days and then rate them again to see if your ratings are the same. So there's things you can do to try to improve the reliability of the ratings that you yourself get. Nonetheless, going back to the procedures, this is a very, very important part of this method. Let's assume in this particular race, in this $20,000 claiming horse, where the variant was slow 3 and the adjusted time was par, this horse earned five class of speed points. This particular method tries to balance both the speed and the competitiveness factors, but it puts a greater emphasis on degrees of competitiveness. That's where the emphasis really is. So the emphasis is not so much on the speed end as on the competitiveness end. Because I think that's where class distinctions ultimately reside. Okay. In this case, if you rate this race as highly competitive, it would get a CQ rating or a competitive quality rating of 5. And the total class speed points is simply the multiplication of the class speed points times the CQ rating. In this case, this horse, the winner of this race, would earn a 25. In a similar situation, a similar kind of a race where the adjusted time was par, and again, the winner earned 5 class and speed points, but the handicapper rated the race as difficult or normal, the CQ rating would be 3. And 3 times 5 is 15. And at the other extreme, where the adjusted time equaled par and the class speed points were 5, but you felt the race was non-competitive. It was simply a wire-to-wire romp, and the horse was fully extended or won in a normal manner, and you wanted to discount the competitive factor, you would rate that one a 1. And 1 times 5 is 5. So in a situation where the winner earned an adjusted time equal to par or the expected time, speed handicappers would be giving the horse the same rating in each situation, but a class handicapper would be giving the horse anywhere from 25 to 5, which is a factor of 5, which is a great difference. This method is designed to discount races or performances that fall down on either end of this scale, of this equation, speed end or the class end. Because, for example, even if you rate the race highly competitive, a 5 on the CQ scale, but this $20,000 claiming horse got an adjusted time of 1:11.3, that would be 5 lengths slower than par. And in this particular method, if you look at 5 lengths slower than par for $20,000 claiming horses, the class speed points would be 2. And 5 times 2 is 10. Instead of getting a 25 for a highly competitive race that was just par, the horse would get a 10 for a highly competitive race that was a second slower than par. So this method is essentially designed to discount performances which are below expectation on either speed or on class. That's what it's designed to do. And any method, any performance that falls down on either one of those sides of the equation will be rated relatively low by this method, and will be rated relatively low in relation to conventional methods of speed handicap. And that's the whole intent.
Jim, how do you factor bias? Let's use the same example that the horse wins wire to wire, therefore gets a 1, right?
Well, you're really making a tremendous leap here, about how to factor bias. So I'd like to put that on the back burner, because it's really a logical leap from where we are in the presentation. But I'll come back to it. Okay, I'll come back to it. But I don't want to jump too far ahead.
Yeah, right.
Ask questions right now about the procedures, the tools that you need to get the ratings, what the basic ratings mean, and how they vary from class to class based on what I've just said.
Is the 25 five times better than the 5, or it's not that simple as far as equating?
It's essentially a factor of 5, yes.
5 times better.
Yes. Okay. It's 5 times better. So, in order to buy into this, you have to buy the argument, that a non-competitive race is, by that kind of tremendous factor, a very, very different kind of performance than the one that was highly competitive. You're buying into a class argument here. The class consists of these qualities. And in this case that was non-competitive, we're saying that these particular qualities of class were not demonstrated. And so we're not going to award the horse extra points or a higher rating simply based on the speed he was able to demonstrate under these kinds of competitive conditions. This is a good point to mention one other thing on the CQ scale, which becomes very important. One of the things we want to do, as we said, was discount the performance that was relatively fast on speed but low on competitive quality. But we don't want to penalize a particular winner or close finisher who, even though the race was low on competitive quality, himself was outstanding. This happens a lot in racing. There's a couple of ways you can penalize horses. One of them is that a race happens to be low on quality, but the winner was just brilliant or outstanding in his performance. The manner of victory was outstanding. I have a little many types of rating procedures use this kind of gimmick. But it's not really a gimmick. It's a technique to try to control for the fact that if you just use the method the way it's designed, you're going to introduce this kind of error. Well, we want to avoid that kind of error. Take the wire-to-wire winner. Even though he didn't have to demonstrate any kind of determination or any kind of willingness, there was no competitive quality in the race whatsoever, he himself looked outstanding. He himself looked truly brilliant. He was eager to do more, would have done more, but didn't have to. This method allows you to project this competitive quality rating up the scale 2 points in a situation where the winner, the phrase that I use and the phrase that I like, showed obvious reserves of speed and power. But all the words are important. It has to be obvious. It's not something where you say, well, did he or didn't he? I'm not sure. If you're not sure, you don't get the projected rating. It's clear cut. And it has to be in reserve. The horse can't be fully extended. It can't be all out. He can't have done his best. If he did his best, you just rate him based on the competitive qualities of that race. He has to have had a lot in reserve. He could have done more. Didn't have to. obvious to you. And you can project that CQ rating 2 points. In the case of the one here, let's assume it was a wire-to-wire victory. It's non-competitive and it earned a one in this method. But on the second replay, you know, you thought the horse really deserved the projected rating because he could have done a lot more than he did. If you change this to a 3, this 5 becomes 15.
In making that judgment, are you saying that you would compare today's wire-to-wire performance with a previous one, and or you make a subjective decision, the way he looked for the way he...
You have to base the decision on the performance you're rating today, not on some previous performance. It's not a relative measure. It's an absolute measure based on what he's showing you today. Not on what he did 2 or 3 weeks ago. You know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, he looked much better than he did today. You're rating today the way he looked today.
Is it possible to use the results charts from the daily racing form?
Well, I mean,
obviously, probably all of us can't see every race every day.
Yeah, few of you can. Even in a situation where they're simulcast.
Right.
So this question is the one that's come up many, many times. The reason I'm hesitant to promote it, it's my second choice, okay, obviously. The first is, this is based on visual skills or observation skills. If you can't see it, you know, okay, go to the charts and the form. Here's some on that. I've tried to do that. Okay. And in testing this method, what I've done is, after I've watched the races for a long period of time, I will give them ratings based on visual skills or observation skills. I then can go back to the Santa Anita charts for last season and just read the charts, and then give a rating based on reading the charts. And then I can look to see whether the chart rating I give is the same I give with the visual skills, and to what extent those two ratings correlate with one another. When I've done that, I've always had an error rate of at least 25%. 1 out of 4 times, the ratings did not correlate well enough. I thought that was a little too high. The chartist tends to look at the race, the descriptions of the race that the chartist gives tends to be from a point of view of trip handicapping and running style. They tend to look at these two things. And of those two things, running style kind of applies here. And what I've learned is that if the race falls at either one of the extremes on this rating scale, is non-competitive or highly competitive, the chartist might mention that in some way. Mm-hmm. And that's helpful comment, and you can rate that more reliably. So at the extremes of the scale, the charts tend to have greater reliability. But if the race is somewhere in the middle, 2, 3, or 4, I find it very difficult to infer that from the charts. And I think you'll be introducing a lot of error in that area. There is a bias on these scales, and it's a useful one. In all rating scales, there's a bias towards the center. So in using a rating scale from 1 to 5, if you're undecided as to whether this race is a 2 or a 3, it's a 3. If you're undecided as to whether it's a 3 or a 4, it's a 3. The bias is always towards the center. The reason for that is, that in any of these typical distributions, the clustering effect is always towards the middle. Most of the races, the majority of the races, cluster towards the middle. The same is true between the 1 and 2 points and the 4 and 5 points. So from practical terms, if you're looking at a race and you're not sure whether to give it a 1 or a 2, it's a 2. If you're not sure whether to give it a 4 or a 5, it's a 4. The bias is always towards the middle. Which helps. That's a very helpful, expedient, practical guideline in using rating scales. It's the same thing if they were rating you on determination from 1 to 5. You know, what kind of perseverance does this handicapper have? You know, does he give up in a losing streak, something like that? It'd be the same kind of bias. I'm not sure if he's a 4 or 5 or he's a 4. I'm not sure he's a 4. So I didn't say that yesterday. I wish I had said that yesterday.
That's brilliant. Days
to
come 2 days.
People come back the second day. So, this part of it, of using it, most of the time we spend our conversation on this part. This part is kind of technical and easy once you've got it. You've got it. Just make the adjustments, and there it is, and it gets this number of points. And this part is not as subjective, you know, the word subjective is accurate, but it's kind of that subjectivity bias, but it doesn't have to be as subjective as all that. And one of the things you can do is, if two people are using it, you can start to discuss your ratings and why you differ. Why this person person gave a 3 and this one a 5, or this one a 4, or this one a 3, you start to discuss that in terms of what qualities did you think you observed, or how much they were demonstrated. I spend a long time in the book talking about this scale. I've got a full chapter on this scale, on what determination means, you know, how to recognize determination, how to rate it, what willingness means, how to rate that. I spend an awful lot of time in the book going over these qualities, because to use the scale, you have to kind of know what determination means. In this little method, determination primarily means the duration of the resistance to a challenge. So a 3 tends to be about a 16th of a mile, which is typical. But a 4, the resistance or the challenge in resistance has lasted for about a furlong, or a little bit more, or thereabouts. And a 5, you're up to about a quarter of a mile. That's one concrete way of thinking about how to distinguish determination, an abstract factor, at the 3, 4, or 5 points on the scale.
Jim, when you talk about determination, the length and duration of that, and you talk about challenges, what's the beaten leading or the leading or beaten length differential? In other words, is a horse under challenge at a length or less, or what's
not
the cutting point?
I mean, in my opinion, you know, the challenge usually sets in even as far back as 2 minutes. It can be. Usually, it's less than that. So I should say that first. Usually the challenge, you know, is within a length and a half, something like that.
Even a length and a half you consider?
Yeah.
Depending on the horse is on the move, is doing the running out?
Absolutely. You can see that in the final stages of races. If you start to observe races from kind of a class handicapping point of view, which is trying to look for these kinds of competitive qualities, you will start to see that. You know, where a horse might have been on the lead by 3 or 4 lengths and another horse, you know, starts to move into striking position and now gets about a length behind, and you will see. You will actually see a reaction by both the horse and the jockey. Mm-hmm. For more exertion, more energy, greater amount of energy being expended. You know, it becomes clear after you start looking at this. It becomes very clear that the horse has started to extend himself more fully at this point. It doesn't need to be just nose to nose or head to head, obviously, when it's like that. Oftentimes, though, when it's like that, the early stages, if they're running relaxed, you know, although there's a certain amount of competition going on, it's really a very normal kind of competition. You know, it's not highly charged at all. It's typical of how horses compete for the early advantage or the early pace, and it falls in this middle area. It's more around the 3. So basically, a typical race, the way I define it in the book, and using this method, is a challenge early and a challenge late, which is, it's typical in the sense that it's not severe, not prolonged, it's not repeated, it lasts for approximately a 16th of a mile, then between calls there's a certain kind of relaxation that takes place in the race and everybody kind of keeps stride and keeps their position, and then it begins again, the pre-stretch call or the 3/16th call or the 8th call, and lasts for about another 16th, and at that point some horse wins the race or asserts itself and draws out and wins. That's typical horse race. And something that's a lot less than that is less competitive, and something that's more than that is more competitive. So that's the concept, really.
If that slow 3 was rated a slow 5, that actually would give the horse 2 better than par, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. The adjusted time would be 110-1. Mm-hmm. That would be 2 better than par, and what points would you get on this? You get 6. Okay. And then if it was a highly rated race, his rating would be 2. Now, if you just go this far, you will have a class rating for all the winners. There's a beaten wins adjustment that's over here. There are 3 or 4 or 5 adjustments on this, so I'm not going to go into any detail in this presentation, but they're there. It's a typical beaten wins adjustment. So you can start to give all the horses class ratings. And those ratings are useful to an extent, but what you really want are numbers that are more transportable from one class level to another and facilitate all kinds of comparisons that you might want to make for horses moving up in class or even horses dropping down in class or for rating shippers with one another, all the different comparisons that handicappers have to make. So this method gets at that too. Going back to these two tables, the next to the last column on the right introduces the concept of class pars. Just like we have speed pars or pace pars, These are class pars. What is a class par? It's a typical race on both the speed dimension and the competitive dimension. Okay? Which on the CQ rating, the typical rating is 3. So the class par is always equal to the number in the par plus or minus 1 column multiplied by a competitive quality rating of 3. So in the case of maidens, for example, if a maiden runs an adjusted time equal to par, it gets a 5. If the race was typical or normal on competitiveness, it would be rated a 3. The class par is 15. So this class par reflects a typical race or a par time, an adjusted time equal to par plus or minus 1, plus a CQ rating of 3. That's what the class pars are. So if the race was typical on speed and typical on competitiveness, it gets these numbers in this particular column. This allows you to start doing a number of things. You can start relating the actual class rating that a horse earned to what was expected for that race. And you can come up with another figure that I call a performance index. What kind of performance really was this? Let's take this example right here and use these three numbers where you come up in the first instance with a class rating of 25. The class par for $20,000 horses is also 15, similar to the maiden rating. Okay? Horse earned 25 in a race where the typical winner earns a 15. If you just take the ratio of those two numbers, the actual rating to the expected rating, you can get an index or a performance index, which is either going to be 1, which would be equal to par, below 1, which would be less than par, or over 1, which would be higher than par. In the case of the 25, 25 divided by 15 is 1 2/3 for a performance index of 1.67. Okay? Considerably higher than par, which is always 1. In the case of the second horse that got the 3 with the adjusted time equal to par, the ratio is 15 to 15, which is just 1. His performance index is 1. And in the third case, where the horse got a CQ rating of 5, a class rating of 5, 15 is 0.33, 1/3. That performance index tells you how well that horse tends to run in relation to par. That's how it's interpreted. How the horse tends to run in relation to par. If you then take this index number and multiply it by any one of these pars, you would have a way of predicting what class rating the horse should earn today if he runs back to his normal performance. So, you've got a $20,000 claiming horse. He's earned 25 points in a situation where the typical winner earns 15. He's got a performance index of 1.67. Today he's running for $32,000. What class rating should he earn? Can you figure that out? He would earn a class rating equal to 21 multiplied by 1.67. So we're taking the performance index, which is a statistic as to how well this horse normally runs in relation to par, and we're multiplying it by today's par. And we're predicting that if this horse runs as well as it normally does, based on past evidence, it should earn a class rating today of today's par multiplied by this number. So if this horse moved up to 32, the class par is what, 21? One and two-thirds times 21 is 35, right? So we would predict that in $32,000 claiming races, this horse would earn the 35 if we're convinced that this is a stable number. This is a true index of how well it normally runs. We can then look to see if the other horses entered at the $32,000 level have done as well as that, or worse than that, or better than that. How this horse, even if this horse really did run its best today, where does it fall in today's field? One way of evaluating horses on the rise or even dropping. This puts the burden on this number to be a stable indicator that you can use as a predictor. So how do you do that? Well, there's two ways of doing it. You can take, what I suggest doing in this method is to look at the last six races. This kind of goes through this over on page two where it says class comparison. Consider the past six races. Why six? Because probability data has shown that recent consistency outperforms consistency. Quirin's demonstrated that. He's demonstrated a lot of things, thank God. But he's demonstrated that. Recent consistency outperforms consistency, and he defines recent consistency as the last six races. So now you've got six races on this horse, six PIs. I suggest you take the top three out of the six because we're trying to rate horses when they've done well, and they've shown us what they can do. In the case of older claiming horses, which is the majority of races, I think it's fair to average those top three ratings and use the average rating as a stable indicator which can be used as a predictor as how well he'll run today. In many other cases, three-year-old claiming horses, for example, averaging the last six is probably not the best way of getting the most stable indicator. You might just want to use the most current indicator, the last race, if you think that is the best reflection of its current ability. There's two ways of doing it. Trying to get a stable index or trying to use the latest one that you think is most predictive of how well the horse is running right now. Where it works best is similar to speed handicapping. You know, speed handicappers use this concept of projected times. Horses that tend to run the same numbers all the time. That's where this works best if you start averaging, because the average really is a very stable indicator of how the horse usually performs. Doesn't matter whether he's a 20 or 32 or 15, whatever it is, he tends to run the same. And in other cases, the averages are just a distortion. There's too much unevenness in the horse's record, and then you have to ask yourself, what's the best indicator of what the horse is doing now, and does that fit at the $32,000 level? So there's some judgments that you have to make on this. But that's how that PI should be used. Try to come up with a stable indicator of how well you think that horse runs in relation to par, multiply it by today's par, and that's your best estimate of what the class rating for this horse should be today. You can start seeing quickly whether in fact it is that, whether he runs to that rating or not. That's the way I suggest using it. It's better than just having the points.
Yes. We were kind of looking at this as a way to help select contenders.
Yeah.
But it really, in one respect, because in reality, what you're talking about, except your averaging technique, is you're selecting pace line.
You could use it that way.
So if you select a proper pace line and use the start methodology, then you may or may not get a different horse than your technique is going to present.
Yeah,
I
agree. Right.
Then what do you do? What's
well, your... you would use the method's horse. I mean, you would use the horse that the method had on top using the methodology. Pace is the separator. Relating the rankings to how the energy demands of the track today and yesterday. That's what you would do. You just, you know, depending on how you're using these ratings. You, if you're using it to pick a pace line, or something like that, then you're going to run that pace line through the method, right?
Well, I guess you could find that you could find a winner potentially using your technique or the certain methodology. I was trying to think of how that was working together. We were looking for a better method.
That's what we're all up
there. Yeah, that's what we're all up there. That has yet to be determined what the best way is to use it.
But if I, in fact, have to make a judgment on which line to use to implement your methodology, I've already been making that judgment to get the proper baseline to implement the certain methodology. I'm just using two separate approaches to the same result, it seems.
Well, if you're using this method, you're using these numbers to pick a pace line in some way. You're going to use a number that's par or better to pick a pace line, or better than par, or something. You know, I don't know. You know, there's some. You're using it to pick a pace line.
What do you recommend using your methodology for in relation to the start methodology?
Well, that's where we're going to. That's all afternoon is dedicated.
Yeah.
Oh,
all
right.
Yeah, it's dedicated to that. Probably identifying contenders. Probably more than anything else.
Right.
But Tom's been using it in a slightly different way, which he'll talk about.
I seem to lose you on the logic of why you take a $20,000 claimer that performed at a 1.67 and make the assumption that he's going to perform at that same ratio at a higher level.
Yeah.
what this tells you, this performance index, is how fast this horse normally runs in relation to par. Now, in the example, we just used one race, $20,000 race. And we know, you know, that a lot of horses can't make that jump. So an incorrect application would be to just take the performance index based on this one race and say, aha, this horse was 1.67 in relation to par here, and so I'm going to predict that that's what it would do at the $32,000 level. That's the illustration I used.